hope Eli has a great year and Daniel never sees the field. I mean, that would be in an ideal world that you'd like to see that. So, but again, it's at the end of the day, it's going to be a decision by the head coach as to when, you know, or if Daniel ends up playing this year.
You are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. My name is Patricia Traina, and I cover your New York Giants for a variety of places. Follow me on Twitter at Patricia_Traina. And you can find links to all my work. You can ask questions of the weekly mailbag. And you can follow along as I tweet from the games. You know, updates, statistical things, injury updates, all that good stuff. So happy to have you with us on today. Today being Wednesday, August 14th. And we'll get you caught up on what's going on in Giants country. Also on the program today, I'm going to have a one-on-one interview that I did with defensive lineman R.J. McIntosh. Did this interview, I want to say, about a week or so ago. Some real good stuff. R.J. McIntosh is actually one of the young defensive linemen. He doesn't get a lot of ink, but he was praised by head coach Pat Shurmur, and he's really popped out at me during training camp practices. So I was able to get hold of him, kind of talk about, you know, his journey so far. And, you know, I hope you will enjoy that interview, which is coming up in segment three of the program. All right. So anyway, to get the program started, you heard the clip from Giants co-owner John Mara at the top of the program before the music, talking about how he hopes Daniel Jones doesn't see the field for at least a year, because that means that Eli Manning is having a good season. Now, it's interesting. When I first heard those words from John Mara, the first thing that popped into my mind is I had a flashback to when Jerry Reese, after they had traded up to get Ryan Nassib, a few years ago, Jerry Reese said the very same thing. And I just, you know, at the time, it just blew my mind, because it was like, wait a minute, you just spent trade assets to move up to get a quarterback, and you're saying you don't want to see him. So at the time, you know, that comment blew my mind. And that was the flashback I had. Now, upon further thought and reflection, I kind of get where Mara's coming from with this. You know, basically, if you're seeing Daniel Jones in there, that means the Giants are having a lousy season. And they have done so much work in the offseason to where the hope is, you know, they have a better year than what they had last year. You know, it's going to take baby steps for this roster to kind of come together and be a contender. But, you know, they're not there yet. They have, you know, several intriguing pieces in place, and we'll see, of course, if it all comes together. But I think that's the message that John Mara was trying to get across in his words about, you know, not wanting to see Daniel Jones until at least next year. At that point, obviously, they'll have to make a decision. If Eli Manning does have a great season, you know, they'll have to make a decision. Do they keep him and renew his contract for a year, or you know, what do they do? Now, also just reading between the lines a little bit here, and this is just my take, but what I think the Giants ultimately are planning to do is, depending on when Jones is ready, that's when they're going to, you know, say goodbye to Eli, regardless of whether Eli has a great season this year or doesn't. I've seen some people opine that even if Eli, you know, has a good year this year, there's a chance he'll be re-signed, and it could be a 2 or 3 year project with him or whatnot. I just don't see the Giants letting Daniel Jones sitting on the bench for 2 to 3 years. I just don't see it. It doesn't make sense. It becomes a waste of assets. And, you know, I know he's a first round pick and they have the option year, but it's just not, to me, it's not a smart business decision. I think this year you get him ready. You get him ready to play. You know, Eli, you know, is at the end of his career. And when the time comes, as much as, you know, I love Eli, as much as I love what he's done for the franchise and what he's meant to the team, at some point you got to move on. You can't necessarily let the guy hold you up and say, well, I'm not ready to retire yet. So I think that's what the Giants will ultimately do. I mean, Eli would have to have an MVP type of a year for them to, you know, to change course and not install Daniel Jones as the quarterback next year. Now, obviously, if injuries pop up into the equation, all bets are off. But that's kind of how I see this playing out. And only time will tell. One last quote I want to play for you from John Mara, why he has such confidence in Eli. So let's have a listen.
He's played well when the protection has been there in front of him and when he has confidence in the protection. I thought the second half of last season he played much better. Our protection got a little bit better. Obviously, Saquon was having a big year. So I think our offensive line is better this year than it has been. So, and he's had a terrific camp so far.
Okay, so John Mara explaining, you know, how Eli, you know, has better protection in front of him, has better, you know, year two in the offense, and just all the stars, in other words, have aligned. Now, again, I appreciate Eli and all he has brought, but at some point, folks, you have to stop with the excuses. You can't continue to say, oh, you know, Eli lost two offensive linemen, or he lost, you know, knock on wood, you know, a receiver or a running back or a tight end or whatever. You've got to stop the excuses at some point. At some point, the quarterback has to be looked at, and you have to say, okay, is this guy someone who will lift the team up and carry the team on his shoulders? I love Eli to death. As I said, I think he's a tremendous individual. I think he's been a great quarterback. I do not think, however, that he has been that type of quarterback for quite a while now. And it pains me to say that, but look, I'm going to call it the way I see it, folks. And, you know, the Giants, obviously, it's their decision. Their opinion is going to mean a heck of a lot more than mine, but that's kind of how I see it. So, anyway, so we'll see how that plays out. I just think it's interesting, but I will say this much. For anybody who thought that Eli Manning and Daniel Jones were going to be in a quarterback competition, and there were some in the media who thought that. I know there were some fans who thought that. And when I was saying that that wasn't going to be the case, a few people were like, oh, you're crazy. There has to be a competition. It's just not, it was never going to happen, folks. I know it was a romanticized dream of seeing the two guys slug it out for the starting quarterback job, but it just wasn't going to happen. And for as good as Daniel Jones looked in his small sampling size against the Jets last week, let's see how he looks with a bigger sample size when he's asked to do a two-minute drill, when he's asked to face pressure, when he's asked to, you know, make adjustments, all the stuff that goes into playing a game. And I think that's what the coaching staff is looking for. And I think that's all part of Pat Shurmur's plan when it comes to the quarterbacks. So as far as playtime expectations, I think Eli will get maybe the first quarter, maybe a little bit of the second quarter. And then you'll see Daniel Jones come in about midway through the second quarter, probably through to the beginning of the fourth quarter. And then one of Alex Tanny or Kyle Lauletta will finish up the game. I don't think they're going to get all four quarterbacks in there again this week. All right, folks, you're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traina. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we have more to discuss, including injury updates, the news on Golden Tate. And don't forget, in segment three, we have the interview with defensive lineman R.J. McIntosh. So do stay with us. This episode is brought to you by Five Star Painting, a neighborly company. Five Star Painting is looking for new owners to join their growing company. Could this be the perfect opportunity for you? Are you driven? Do you have the heartbeat of an entrepreneur? If you are interested in running your own business, text 5-STAR to 87000 right now to learn more. Choosing to start your business with 5-STAR Painting means setting yourself up for success by surrounding yourself with the best in the business and the best at business. With 5-STAR Painting, you'll be your own boss, pick your own territory, set your own hours, and live a better quality of life running a business that you can be proud of. You'll have access to the best resources to help you scale your landscape business to meet your personal and professional goals, and you will go home every day with the satisfaction of helping your customers enhance and maintain the beauty of their homes. As a five-star painting owner, you'll also be part of the greater Neighborly community of home service brands. Neighborly has empowered more than 3,700 entrepreneurs to achieve their dream and goals through local business ownership. No one knows the home service industry better than Neighborly. Every year, nearly 1 million customers are proudly served by one of Neighborly's 22 award-winning brands, some of which include Mosquito Joe, Molly Maid, Glass Doctor, and Mr. Reuter. Whether you've been thinking about starting your own business or you're already owning your own painting company, text 5STAR, that's FIVESTAR, to 87000 to learn more about how a 5STAR painting franchise can help you get where you want to go faster than it's going alone. Again, text 5STAR, that's FIVESTAR, to 87000 to learn more about the Neighborly brands that may be available in your area. Welcome back, Giant fans, to Locked On Giants. I'm Patricia Traina. Happy to be with you. Thank you so much for tuning in. So we finally got information now about Golden Tate, who appealed his four-game suspension last Tuesday. So, incidentally, you know, ironically, it was a week. You know, initially we were told it would be about 3 days, but apparently an arbitrator might have been on vacation or whatnot, so there was a little bit of a delay. And for those who haven't heard, Tate's appeal was denied. The suspension, the four-game suspension, is being upheld. And unfortunately, even for Tate, I mean, they didn't even knock it down or cut it in half or trim a game off. It's going to be a full four-game suspension. And Golden Tate released a statement through the Giants' Twitter account after word came down that the suspension was upheld. And I'm just going to read a little part of it, and then I have a couple quick thoughts about it before we move on to the next topic. So Golden Tate said, and I quote, "This morning I received the unfortunate news that my appeal was denied. I went into the arbitration with the understanding that due to the facts, unlike many other cases, we could be the exception to win. Unfortunately, the NFL stood by their no-tolerance policy, which I hope one day to help have a part in reforming, so no other player has to go through this situation." End quote. Tate also goes on to say that, you know, he appreciates the support he's gotten from the fans, from the organization, and that he is committed to holding himself to a higher standard. Now, you know, I don't know all the circumstances behind what he took or whatnot, but here's my take on this. I think it's, you know, I think it stinks that he has to lose four games. I put an article up on the Maven, the maven.io/NYGiants about what the Giants are going to lose with Tate not in the lineup. But here's the thing, folks. You are responsible for what goes into your mouth. It's just like, you know, if you're on a diet and you know that you shouldn't have that second piece of cake, but you go and you have it anyway, and guess what? Now that second piece of cake causes you to gain a half a pound or a pound or whatever. You are responsible for what goes into your body. And, you know, especially when it comes to medication, you know, it's like if you're not asking what's in a supplement or what's in a prescription, and you take it and it triggers some kind of negative or adverse reaction, that's on you. And I'll give you a really good example. In my case, I am allergic to penicillin, all right? So if I have penicillin products, I have all kinds of, you know, issues, including, you know, breathing issues. So anytime a doctor gives me a new prescription, I automatically say, okay, look, I am allergic to penicillin. I need to know what is in this and how is it going to counteract with, you know, any supplements I might be taking as far as vitamins or any other medication. And I make sure I get all that information. Now, quite frankly, the thing that kind of surprises me is that, you know, why it just sounds like Golden Tate didn't ask what was in the medication. You know, he didn't, you know, being an NFL player, you have this list of supplements that are banned, by the PED policy. And I'm just kind of surprised that, you know, it doesn't sound like there was an inquiry made. Maybe there was, I don't know. But I think if there had been, perhaps, you know, he would have been alerted to the fact that there was a substance listed on that ban list that wasn't allowed. So just kind of surprising. But again, the bottom line is you are responsible for what you put into your body. So I'm not sure why they thought they could get the appeal overturned or knocked down, but the rule is what the rule, you know, what it is. I mean, it clearly states it's a no tolerance policy, no exceptions. I think a few years ago, I believe it was Robert Mathis of the Colts. I think he had a similar situation where he took some kind of supplement that was related to fertility treatments, and his appeal was denied. So really, this whole thing with Golden Tate does not come as a surprise, you know. And it's unfortunate because, like I said, I think the Giants are going to lose quite a bit without him in the lineup. But the good news is, if there is, you know, a silver lining, when he does get back, he should be as fresh as a daisy. And, you know, the fresh legs, I think, will serve him well when he is eligible to return in week 5 of the NFL season. Couple of other quick things from practice. Injury update. Darius Slayton, the wide receiver, has been working. He's been, you know, working his way back into the swing of things. So there is a possibility we might see him on Friday night, which would be a lot of fun. You know, this kid really looked good in the spring, and it's just been a shame that, you know, he's been sidelined with the hamstring injury since the start, really, of training camp. Big George, he is still out in the concussion protocol, and I think this is his third week in the protocol. So just, you know, really, again, you want to take care of it. You don't want to rush back. But I have to think, you know, for him, it's disappointing that it's taking so long because, you know, he's missing valuable time. And you just wonder at some point, is he maybe going to go on injured reserve and call it a day? Or, you know, is practice squad in his future? So we'll have to see, you know, if he makes it back. But he has missed quite a lot, and it's really unfortunate because, you know, the Giants, I think, were hoping to develop him this year and get him ready so that come next year he could potentially compete for a bigger piece of the pie. A couple of other things. The Giants made some roster moves, and I'm just checking to see. I have them right here. Let me just pull them up really quick. Amba Edetawo was waived. He was added to injured reserve. He has a torn Achilles tendon that he suffered yesterday in practice. Also, tight end Isaiah Seawright was waived injured as a hip. So if he clears waivers, he will get added to the injured reserve list. And the Giants also waived defensive end Alex Jenkins. So that doesn't look like it was an injury-related thing. That just might be, you know, maybe it's a performance thing. I don't know. But as far as replacements, let's see. The Giants signed tight end Jake Powell, who played his college ball at Monmouth University. So he is a former teammate of Reggie White Jr.'s. Two of them reunited here on the Giants. Powell is 6'6 and 230 pounds. And he had a short stint with the Saints before coming with the Giants. At Monmouth, he had 54 receptions for 641 yards and 6 touchdowns. So probably, you know, just for depth at this point, since he's coming in so late. But who knows, if he shows something, he could, you know, stick around for a little bit and you know, maybe on the practice squad. So we'll see how he looks and, you know, when he gets into the lineup. You're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traynor. We're going to take our final break. When we come back, I have that one-on-one interview with defensive lineman RJ McIntosh. So do stay with us. Welcome back to Locked On Giants. I'm Patricia Traina, and as promised, here is my one-on-one interview with defensive lineman RJ McIntosh. Hope you enjoy it. Had a rough start to your NFL career.
Yeah. just, if we can go back, and I know you don't want to say what you had, and I'm not going to go there with you, but can you just kind of go back a little bit with me? When you found out that you were going to have to miss the time, we talk about mental reps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for every guy, mental reps is different. Can you share the mental reps, how you went about it? Were you, I don't know, picking the brain of a teammate? How were you engaging in the mental reps?
The way I took it was, well, kind of my whole career, at least college career. Besides my freshman year, but I was always the starter or whatever, so I took most of the reps, so I didn't have to do many mental reps. But because it was my first year in the league, I think it was very useful because it was my way of, instead of going out there and making mistakes maybe, I could take, like you say, I could pick different players and see how they do it and handle it. So it was very important to pay attention and stay locked in and get mental reps.
Who did you draw from? Anybody in particular?
Dalvin.
Okay.
I mean, it was a new defense to them also, but they've been here a couple months before me. But Dalvin, we got Josh from last year. He's definitely helped me out a lot with it because he's been in the defense a long time. And now, just everybody, just even BJ going out there getting physical reps before me and seeing how he handled it. So I'm just trying to, pay attention every day and take in what I could, basically.
Was it kind of an advantage to you because it was a new defense, everybody was learning it, you could also learn it at the same time instead of having to necessarily come in and, oh my God, these guys have been in the system for, 3 years, they know the playbook inside and out, but now you guys could kind of like bounce things off of each other?
You said, was it an advantage or just?
Was it an advantage?
I think it was an advantage, because mental reps, I think, is very important. And that helped me out big time, because now I'm ready, Even though I played a little bit last year, I think me paying attention, because if I didn't pay attention, I would be out there and making a lot of mistakes. But it was very important to stay focused and not take the positive out of it, understanding that it's something I couldn't control, and that one day I will come back and hopefully be ready. That was I made it my business to be ready when my opportunity came.
Now, I went back and I looked at your stats from last year, mm-hmm. some advanced analytics. Mm-hmm. Considering you only played in, I think it was 6 games or 8 games, I can't remember the numbers, mm-hmm. you were very productive, particularly against the run. You had a high run stop percentage. So clearly everything you were doing, up until that point was paying off for you. But when you first got out there, having not really played in over a year because, from college to then,
mm-hmm.
did you find you were rusty? I mean, the numbers don't show it, but,
A little bit, definitely with my first step. It was definitely a little rusty. And obviously, coming to the league is faster. It's up here in college, so I was, behind a little bit, but I try to do my best and try to be quick off the ball to have the advantage at the snap of the ball. So, but yeah, that's besides that, and I'm a little strength, I just think it's kind of hard to see if I'm rusty, know if I'm rusty, because it's a different level to figure out if it's just, it's better players and quicker, better competition. So, but I felt like I was a little slow, and I just, gathered into it as it went along.
To be shut down like that, unexpectedly, I'm assuming, did you say to yourself, oh man, because you're a competitor, you mm-hmm. want to be out there.
Exactly.
How did you deal with that mental aspect that I can't play, I got to sit on NFI for, 6 weeks or however long it was? I mean, that had to be eating at you, I would think.
Yeah, it was. Definitely at first. Like you said, I'm a competitor. It's a dream come true, making it to the lead, and just for that to pop up when it did. I took it kind of hard in the beginning, but, my family, my mom, definitely she told me to understand that it's all God's plan and something I can't control, so just don't let it eat myself up, just stay focused and keep grinding and working hard and just be ready when my opportunity came.
And the blessing, of course, is whatever it wasn't career ending.
Yes, that's a blessing also. Before my career even started, it could have been ending. So I thank God for that, and I believe, big believer in that God does things for a reason. So,
having gone through those few games and kind of gotten your feet wet at the NFL level, how did year two because this is, we'll call it year two, even though coach said last year was year zero, this is year one. What did you change? How do you train differently? Did you change anything as far as, you know, goals, as far as adding more muscle? Did you change your diet, your recovery? What did you alter?
Kind of a little bit of everything. I wonder. I saw at the end of the year that I went through something, but I could tell there's a bit different, so I knew I had to get stronger. I knew I had to get faster and try to just get my rhythm back full. So I just try to prepare over the summer, off season. I was here the majority of the time and just working on getting stronger and losing a little fat and turning into muscle, and so that I could become a better player. And I look forward to this year to show that I am.
When you look back at your spring, since summer has just really started, do you see the work you did in the offseason paying dividends?
Yes, I do. I see it a big time. And I mean, obviously you went in pads, but, you know, we just started pads, back up in pads, so I just try to do what I can to the kind of player I want to be.
What type of player do you want to be?
A dominant player, you know, run stopper, pass rusher. You know, just I just want to get better each and every day. I'll take different keys from different players like Dalvin and BJ, and, you know, even Dett's his big self. So I try to learn from everybody, and I just want to become best player I could become.
What can you learn from a rookie?
I mean, he went to Clemson, so he's been.
Well, you went to the U, didn't you?
I did went to the U, but they've been doing what they've been doing. But I just try to learn. You know, you can't look at it that way. You can learn from anybody.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, just real quick, they had you playing tackle in all the positions on the line, right?
Oh, basically, yes. It's just move around the line.
Okay. Awesome.
All right. There you have it, Giant fans. RJ McIntosh looking to be a part of that defensive line rotation. Really a super young man. Has flashed, not just in practice, but he flashed last week in the game against the Jets. Someone to keep an eye on, you know. And really a good story. A guy who's coming back from, you know, being behind the eight ball and just trying to make an impact and stick around and contribute to hopefully what will be a winning season. All right, Giant fans, that's going to do it for this week, or today's show, I should say. Quick programming note, we'll have one more show for you on Thursday. Just a quick show. We'll do a preview of the Giants-Bears game. No show on Friday because that is the day of the game. And then I'll have a reaction show on Saturday. So plenty more to come on the Locked On Giants podcast. I want to thank you for listening, and we will talk again soon.